Hi everyone, I'm Joel Premack and welcome to the Community-Led Growth Show. Each week, I will be speaking with community leaders to share insights with you all on how to build a community-led growth company. Let's get to it. Hey everyone, I'm Joel Premack, host of the Community-Led Growth Show. Today, I'm joined by Allison Abel, Senior Manager of Community at SciSense. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Allison.
So excited to be here. Thank you so much for reaching out. I'm excited to chat community today.
Of course. Well, how could we not have you on the show is a better question. So first thing first, would you please give all of our listeners a quick 30-second intro about yourself?
Sure. And I'm going to try to stay at the 30 seconds. I have a bit of a unique background, a non-traditional path that landed me in community, which I do think is not rare in our area. But I will say, I feel like I've grown up being a bit of a community builder. When I was in high school and college, I organized and launched a lot of clubs, did a lot of meetups and volunteer organization, and kind of did a lot of those things and thought a lot of had a lot of passion in it. When I graduated, I did have a passion as well for education, and I started my journey as a teacher. What was interesting is I graduated in 2009 at the height of the recession. And what's interesting about that is it was really hard to find full-time teaching jobs. So oftentimes what would happen is you'd get a segment of teaching and a segment of something else. And that was technology for me. So I had the opportunity to work on programs to integrate technology in the classroom and really realized and recognized that I had a really big passion for technology. I just didn't realize that there was technology outside of being an engineer. And that was kind of my first insight into that. Realized the classroom was not for me long-term. And by chance, at this time, I had started this thing called a teacher leadership network. Teachers are notorious for not being the best networkers. Somebody can definitely argue with me on that, but it's really hard to find the time or the way to do it. So I organized this group of teachers. We met quarterly and eventually monthly, and we'd have workshops and panels and a fun happy hour networking event, and got sponsorship from a local university to assist me in making it a formal thing and more widespread through the city. And through that opportunity, was able to land a position in the marketing department for the university and started to hone in some of my more marketing skills, still not feeling like I found my place that I was going to land. Worked in the graduate school, revamped all of their admissions processes, built a bunch of student programs, still not 100% sure. And what I ended up doing, and I kind of laugh at myself, is I couldn't find the right job. So I just started Googling random skills that I really enjoyed or things I enjoyed doing and kind of putting them together, project management and creative stuff. And community manager popped up. This random job posting, which years ago was very rare, did a quick Google search on community management. And at the time, CMX and Feverbee were around, but it was still very new. Still not 100% sure, reached out to HireLogic, who was hiring the community manager. And you can say the rest is history. The chief community officer at the time said, you have all these amazing diverse skills and that's essential in being an effective community manager. I promise you, you found your place. And sure enough, I did. So that's the long and short of it. Probably the longer than 30 seconds, but that's how I got here.
No, but that's all amazing. And thank you so much for sharing your story, especially because I think right now we're kind of revisiting that conversation that we were in 08, 09 of teachers looking for like other opportunities. And I've been seeing a lot about that on LinkedIn. There's a Slack group that I'm a member of that's really dedicated to helping people in the education space move into other roles, but yet still apply those same great skill sets that you learn through being in that sector.
Yeah, and that's one thing I would share too. Oftentimes teachers are overlooked, but they do some amazing things and have such a variety of skills, conflict management, relationship building, project management. I could go on and bring so much to the table, and we're used to having to learn things really quickly. And so we can adapt to any type of environment too. So I would really encourage, if anybody is looking at hiring, to consider a teacher. I promise it's going to be one of the best decisions that you make. And I'm not just speaking from my personal experience. As a result of my hiring, HireLogic actually hired a few other teachers, and they've been some of the most successful community managers that have worked there too.
On the other side of this, I will also throw a plug. I know at least one person who was hired who was a former teacher into an enablement role. Yep. And now they've moved from that company, but are now at the VP level in enablement.
Yep. So much stuff. I don't want to totally derail though. I could talk about teachers being super effective all day and every day.
Fair. And I'm sure I could contribute some to that conversation. But back into our conversation around community and your story. So as you touched on, you were previously with HireLogic. So what was that transition like, moving from supporting clients as kind of a consultant for their communities at HireLogic to now building out your own community at SciSense for customers?
Yeah, it kind of leans back into my non-traditional route of to where I am today as a senior manager of community at SciSense. Oftentimes people start owning and managing communities and then go into consulting. One of the unique things about HireLogic, and one of the reasons why I feel so fortunate to have had that opportunity, is while we were what you traditionally classify as consultants, we were also doing a lot of day-to-day community management for several of our customers. And think about it, how awesome is it to start your career in an incubator setting? I had a team of 10 talented community managers that I started with that ended up growing to 20 plus. And all of us were dedicated to community projects of all shapes and sizes and types. And so I've had the opportunity to build and launch communities and community programs for big companies, small companies, nonprofit, for-profit, any type of use case you can think of. And then on top of that, do a lot of really cool experimental research type things as a result of that work too. So I think it was the best way to learn and grow in not only my community building skills, but also my leadership and management skills too, because I did have the opportunity to level up through that experience too. So it really gave me the tools that I feel I needed to be successful in my current role.
Awesome. Quick question, side question too. Yeah. Do you have a favorite project that you worked on?
I've had so many. I think one of my favorite projects was we actually did a revitalization of a community. And it was a very specialized niche community with a highly skilled group of audience members who traditionally didn't necessarily like to collaborate or interact with each other. And we were able to essentially reconfigure our strategy and approach and ended up having really high engagement metrics that exceeded any type of benchmarks for a group that traditionally did not like to engage. So through that experience, what I loved was we got to be really crafty and creative, and we didn't let the negativity that we were getting from our members really stop us from pursuing our end goals.
That's awesome and sounds definitely like a great experience. So thank you so much for sharing. Mm-hmm. Current role at SciSense, how did you and the other stakeholders decide to go with a customer community versus a broader audience community that is the audience that you would target at SciSense through sales, marketing, et cetera?
That's a great question. I think that's a question that's really important to ask in any community building effort and project. And I think where you find that answer is when you sit down and really spend the time to develop your community goals and the process that it takes to develop those. I'm a big believer that your goals should always align to your organizational goals and objectives as well. And also keep in mind what your customers are aiming to achieve in their day-to-day lives and at their organizations, and kind of merge those together. And what quickly became apparent for us in the SciSense particular example is that we had two main things and objectives we wanted to achieve initially. And I really want to emphasize the initial thing. I think goals aren't set in stone for forever. They need to be iterative, they need to be flexible, and they need to grow both as your customers and your organization grow too. So this first iteration of community, what we've been focused on is the support ticket deflection concept or self-service. Our customers easily being able to access the knowledge they need to succeed in their role in a day-to-day kind of context easily and quickly, and also have a place to ask a question and get a response. The second part of that, which also relates, is our customers kept mentioning, hey, I want to meet another customer. I feel like that's every product, right? Hey, I bought this great thing, but how is everybody else doing it? How are they finding success? And I think community is such a great opportunity to connect those peers together and to be able to collaborate on projects. And some of our best actual discussions and conversations we've had in community have actually been, you know, customers collaborating with each other to solve the problem, and us, they wouldn't have had that opportunity if we didn't have the community otherwise.
That's awesome to hear. I love that piece, especially about like learning, especially sometimes there's, of course, like a core use case for a platform or a software, but then sometimes if you kind of tilt it, there are these other ways that are pretty unique or other areas of a business that may gain value from it as well. So I love that idea of you guys are allowing those conversations to happen naturally in your space. So thank you.
Yeah, I would just comment really quickly. I like to think of community building somewhat as a tree too, right? As the tree grows, it's going to grow more and more branches, and it's going to be bigger and bigger, and it's very much its own ecosystem. And I think community as an ecosystem too. I think where things can kind of derail and go wrong in the building process is we try to think of it all at once, when we just kind of need to start at the root and the base and build out from over there. So that's kind of what we've been focused on. What is our MVP? What do we need to get off the ground to get the thing going? And then set the stage for the right growth over time too.
Definitely would agree with that. And that's the perfect segue into my next question that I had lined up for. In about 3 months that the community's been live, how did you go from 0 to 500 members in it? And how are you engaging with those members through events, newsletter, forum discussions, et cetera?
Great question. So something I'll emphasize here that's a little bit of unique to some community launch is that happen. We are in beta, and we are public beta, which is very interesting. So I will say we did a 2-week time frame of a private beta where we invited a few members and partners and employees in to essentially make sure the thing didn't break when we got people in there, you know, pre-seed a little bit of content, just make sure our ducks were in a row to be able to launch in a public setting. I'd say we had probably about 45 to 50 participants in that effort. And then what was interesting and a different tactic that I took was we promoted very limitedly when we launched. We did one social post and we did one email. And one of the things we leaned into is we are launching this as a beta, and we invite you in to join us in the community building effort. And the reason we did that is because we wanted to ensure we had the right internal processes in place to be able to scale and grow the way that we wanted and be able to serve in the way we want. We also wanted to allow some space and flexibility to be able to pivot if needed. So a lot of the past 2 months that we've been launched has been doing a lot of pressure testing of systems, revamping of systems, a lot of the background things that the community may not be able to see, but have huge impact for when we do go to do our large scale launches. And then just making sure that we're listening, like what are conversations that are happening organically? Where is our audience leaning? Do we even have the right discussion boards set up? Are we creating content that's even applicable? Are we building the right knowledge plan long-term? So it's been a lot of listening and observing, and that's been extremely helpful. And we've been very surprised by the amount of organic activity we have really significant visits and returning visits. We've grown our member base, which I'm happy to report is primarily customers too. And a lot of peer-to-peer interaction already happening, which makes me really excited for Q2 when we start to really do our widespread promotional campaigns and launch kind of one of the final, not final, but next piece of our project, which is that product feedback space. So low effort right now, but it's a lot of building in the background that we've been doing. And we are seeing some of the success of that because people see the value in the space too.
One, that's wonderful. Two, extremely excited to see what you guys do in Q2 now. Now I'm like, please, can we have like a little like watching party or something?
Well, I'll give you a little sneak peek. So something that's oftentimes missed in community is community is supposed to be fun too. Community can be very professional and it should be professional and it's there to serve a professional need in a lot of cases, but there should be fun too. So we actually have a gamification program that we've built out, and one of the big parts of that is we introduced a community pup named Scout. So like the rest of the world, we adopted a pup during COVID too. And Scout, our community dog, is ready to help you scout for answers and also guide you on your community data journey. So Scout will probably be making more of an appearance come Q2.
Okay, I will be on the lookout for Scout. All you listeners out there, you be too.
Yep.
Go for it.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, I'm very excited about it.
I'm excited too. I'm like, it's hyping my company. I'm like, ooh, I just want to watch. But you just touched on this is building your community roadmap. So you essentially have strong foundation for the long term. What's your process for actually building out a community roadmap? Because I feel like a lot of people have different processes, as well as because community is now starting to per se get hot in the market, now people are looking to kind of make it more programized or make it more of like a true program versus what it was before, where it was like a very nice thing, not too much effort typically has been put into it. Except for a few key players, I would say, in the last 10 plus years. So I'd love to hear about your process for building a community roadmap.
Yeah, and I think SciSense is a great example of that. They had a forum, and I'm very intentional in not saying community. They had a forum that customers could go to and ask questions. But to your point, it wasn't very programmatic, and it wasn't necessarily prioritized all the time. And I think anyone would admit that. And I think it was one of those first iterations of the support forum concept where somebody launched something, but there was still so much unknown. And I think what we've come to learn is that strategy is so key in the development and growth and vibrancy of the community too. And I know that several industry reports have stated if you have a strategy in place that is a real strategy that is aligned and agreed upon, you're going to see that success long term. So for roadmaps, which honestly is probably one of my favorite topics, I will admit I lean very operationally. I get very excited about these things. I don't necessarily have a secret sauce. I'm going to try to keep this high level because I could talk about this for hours. Would be love to hear what other people do and how they approach it. But for me, at the highest level, my roadmaps, before I dive into my process, are yearly. They're broken into quarters, and they are actually further broken down within each quarter, which I'll talk about in a minute. But I build them starting in Q3. So Q3, the Q3 prior to the year that will be enacted, and utilize Q3 and Q4 to really refine it before it's launched. I think it's really important to give yourself the space to build these things and be able to nurture them the right way to have the success you need to. At the highest level, I'd say the process that I follow is a reflection process, a brainstorm process, planning, building, getting feedback, and then getting that approval. And if we go in the weeds a little bit, the first step I take, I'm going to lean back to something I mentioned before, goals. I think it's really important to take some time to solidify and align on your goals for that next year. And that can be a process, especially because I do think it's important that your exec team is also aligned on the things that you're aiming to achieve. So by starting in Q3, I'm giving myself that time to really dive in with the applicable teams I need to dive in with and solidify those things, because that's the foundation of any plan I create. After that is what I like to call my research phase or reflection phase. And I say research or reflection because if you're building a brand new community, you may not have data. If you have an existing community, you may have data architecture and infrastructure figured out. So spending time to reflect on the data and information that you have, take it all in, absorb it. If you're pre-launch, you may be sitting here like, well, I don't have any community data. Like, what am I going to look at? Ring, 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 perfect opportunity to engage other stakeholders and other departments. So something I do when I don't have that information is I go to applicable teams. I go to the product team, go to the support team, go to the customer success team. And I say, what are you measuring? What information are you collecting? What data do you have? Can I get access to your dashboards? Where are you storing these things? How are you deciphering these things? And collect all that information because that's still very important information in your building process and your roadmap process. So again, goals, reflection. So looking at your data, looking at your metrics, looking at any survey results you may have. And then I take all of that information and I think it's important to write it down. But how I write it down is actually into a SWOT analysis. So I build out a yearly SWOT. And for those that may not be familiar, SWOT is strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and threats, strengths and weaknesses being internal to your organization, opportunities and threats being external. And it's a great chart that you can have and visual to really lay out your successes. And while, you know, weaknesses have negative connotations, I always put in little brackets, actually not weaknesses, but big opportunities. And I put big opportunities there. And it's great because it helps you visualize the things you've just been reflecting on. And really that SWOT analysis can be used to guide you in the prioritization side of the roadmap too. So goals, analyze, research, reflect, build out your SWOT. And then my favorite step, get a bunch of sticky notes and just come up with any and all ideas you can think of. And how I keep this organized, and this is gonna go back to the structure of my roadmap, is I actually bucket my roadmap. So I think it's really important to be intentional about how your time is spent. So I break my time of community building into three parts: external programming, so think community facing, internal program, think enablement internally, and then technical, so platform development. And that's really important to keep in mind because I think the platform side of things oftentimes gets left off the list or forgotten about, or you're in a project and you're like, oh no, I need time to develop something to fit that need. So I think it's important to spend some time in that. So I have my three columns and I literally, if you're doing this as a team of one, get out the physical post-its and just post it up a wall. If you're doing it as a team of multiple, get that virtual whiteboard going on. There's so many great virtual whiteboards now, tag it up. And then what I do is after we've spent some time brainstorming, we take that list and we prioritize it. So we actually order every single item. After we order every single item, again, leaning into the SWOT, leaning into the time we spent reflecting and the goals we have, we then think about the time. Unfortunately, we only have a year. We don't have infinite amount of time, I wish. You got to think about the size of your team, the amount that they can take on, in addition to the day-to-day stuff we're not even capturing per se in the roadmap. I create a backlog list. So we start taking things off, start putting it into the backlog, because hopefully you're just going to like kill it. And there's going to be that one opportunity where you're like, wow, I got something done really fast. I have space to do more. So you have your backlog list and it's already prioritized and ready for you to go. So after that, I know I'm being lengthy here, but this is the process. After that, I socialize my roadmap. So I go on an internal roadshow, which I also use as an opportunity to promote the community internally. And I get feedback. Are there any big red flags? Are there any projects, you know, as a company we're going to be focused on that may mean some of the community things I prioritize for a certain quarter need to move? So get all that feedback, collect all of that, create a final roadmap, which then I then send to the exec team for sign off. And then we implement. Two things I'll mention there. While I build a roadmap, again, the roadmap should be living. So each month we have a roadmap review that I complete. And that will take different forms depending on the need. But primarily the objective there is to make sure we're evaluating the progress we've made and also reprioritize some potential things that may need to be adjusted or accommodate new things that we didn't anticipate too. So that monthly check-in has been really helpful and it also keeps everybody aligned and moving forward. And then something else that I'm going to share is a hot tip. If there's anything you remember from this very lengthy deep dive into this roadmap process, something that I do that is not often done in community building that I highly, highly recommend is a quarterly business review process. So I create a community QBR. And what I do is essentially I include all of the metrics that we've identified as our key metrics. I do a SWOT analysis for the quarter. There's a few other additional pieces that I'll put in there around, you know, progress and projects, et cetera. But I also, the one thing I'll share that's related to this roadmap thing, I have a slide that says, what would I like to see developed in the future? Something I learned or the few things I've observed that I want to keep in mind. And guess what? That's the list I go to first in my brainstorm process. So I know that was lengthy, but at the top of it, goals, review and analyze, complete a SWOT, do your whiteboarding, socialize, get that feedback, and then get that approval. And then think of ways that you can scale it throughout the year too.
I love it. Is there, like, I'm surprised if there's not a template of your process for other community people, we may make one as a follow-up to this event. I'm not kidding.
Oh yeah, I have it actually outlined because I wanted to make sure I kept it brief because I could go into tangents about each of these steps too. So we can definitely collaborate on something to make that a little bit more succinct. I tried really hard.
I love it, but I'm totally okay also that it was so in-depth because then it's so actionable for people too. And it was a really kind of like under the hood kind of peek of like, this is how you build it and make it such a strategic program, not just, ooh, this nice kind of thing over here that's not a real program. So I loved it. I love all of that. Thank you so much. So now that we've talked about how you engage members, how you build your roadmap, kind of the next piece really of this is, what are your leading indicators? Because you're only a few months into actually having a community. What are your leading indicators that you're watching to show that this is successful and more essentially like resources and such should be allocated to it, whether it's now or in the future, should it continue to foster and grow healthfully?
So I think there's two big questions here and I wanna make sure I address them both. The first one, the resourcing side. And I wanna mention it first because it relates to all the steps and work I just mentioned above. By documenting and completing all the steps that I've shared above, it was really easy for my executive and leadership team to see the importance of gaining additional support in the community area because they've been involved in the building process all along and they've seen the growth and they've seen what's involved. And I've been very clear that this is what I can do as a team of one and this is what I can do if I had a larger team. And so I was able actually to demonstrate the value in adding to the community team and added a content person recently that's dedicated to community content. So use my story as an example that the work does pay off and it might seem tedious at first, but again, something I'll emphasize and something that I'm really excited to see community ops growing as a concept too is why it may be a lot of work up front, there are ways that you can make it scalable over time that have huge impact on the things that you're doing in day to day, including being able to grow your team. Metrics wise. So as you mentioned, we are brand new. Something that I've found in my community building journey is it's never a good thing to set benchmarks right at the start. And so I'm sure that's controversial for some, and I'm sure some execs are like, but we need the numbers. So something that I, or something that I believe is, it takes at least 6 months to get some really good insight into your community, not only into the behaviors of the community, but the types of activity happening. And being able to have that data, I think, is so critically important in setting benchmarks for the future. Now, that being said, I'm not naive to the fact that I can't report on things. So what I oftentimes do is I structure my metrics anyways into the acquisition, conversion, and engagement concept, those three buckets. And what we've done is we've selected some key measures there, not necessarily set benchmarks, but things that we're very interested in better understanding to eventually set some benchmarks for success too long-term. So acquisition, for example, site visits is important to us. Are we generating any traffic? Where are we generating traffic from has also been very interesting. And then the number of returning visits too. Are people coming back? So those kinds of ventures. Conversion, are we getting members? And who are those members? And I think that's the key that oftentimes is missing. That's great, you have 5,000 members, but who are they? Are they customers? Are they random people? Are they employees? So making sure, again, our goal is to have the majority of users be customers, and we're succeeding in that. And then engagement. I define engagement as a meaningful action. I know engagement means a lot of things, but when I state that, some type of action you've taken in the community. So are we getting threads? Are we getting replies? So those types of measures. In addition to those kinds of measures, we did set some benchmarks because I do think, again, it is important to be able to report up to executives and for them to easily be able to share, like, these are the things we're striving towards. So I leaned into my experience in common industry related benchmarks. So for example, we are aiming to have 90% of all threads receive a response within 48 hours. I think that is something all communities should strive for and something that we are striving for at SciSense. And has also been a great motivator to assist us in building our internal processes. And then another one that we explored is 90% of all threads have a solution marked. Most of our conversation is problem solving related. And so we want to be able to make sure that we are have an easy way for people to identify an answer if they're looking up a question. Now 90% is commonly used, but we're going to observe and see because we do have the collaborative conversations too. And we don't necessarily want to not count those and pick one answer that doesn't make sense. So we're going to see how that goes and see if we continue to see a trend of most questions in one answer, or we may adjust if we see more collaborative conversation happen too, if that makes sense.
Definitely does.
Yep. So I'll stop there. I know I'm already going over time.
No. We still have time. What are you talking about? No, that was all wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing on how you both kind of advocate for resources and show. I love that idea of here's what I can do as one, here's what I can do as a team. I love that idea.
And something just in my community building journey I've leaned into is what's interesting is when community gets hot and they start to, and people start to see it and understand it and understand how it can impact the work they do, you suddenly have a flood of requests. So I actually have a roadmap that I've built out in monday.com. We use monday.com, and it's public and visible, and everyone can see the number of requests we're getting and how we're having to prioritize those requests. And so I go into a lot of conversations with really excited stakeholders who are like, I want to do this thing right now. And so we have to pull up the roadmap and we have to talk about it, and we have to really determine, is this something that is such a high priority, it needs to have another thing be deprioritized. And it's been a great way to kind of gain visibility into the work that we have to do and the level of effort involved, and that we can't do everything as much as we want.
Well, I think an equally interesting part of what you just said, especially when you bring it up, and I love that it's public, by the way, too, for everyone to see, that you also kind of make sure that it's equitable among the different like stakeholder teams or people, because I'm sure product is likely on there, as a stakeholder. I'm sure marketing success support is in there as well. Maybe sales is in there. I'm not going to speculate much more than those, but I would imagine that it also just kind of keeps it equal. So it's not one or two are really dominating the priorities for whether it's that quarter or even for the entire year, especially.
Yep, definitely. And this is totally tangential, but it's interesting you mentioned sales. So we actually do have sales involved in our community, but as experts. So what's interesting is they know the product, they get the questions. And so we've actually been leveraging them for some of our moderation, as well as like knowledge base building and blog building, because they are experts and they do know so many great things. And they are hearing from the customers too, what is most important to them. So they've actually been a critical stakeholder in some of this building process too, which I know is non-traditional for a lot of communities, but highly, highly recommend engaging your sales team.
Okay. I love that secret sauce. That's an amazing tip. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay. Last question, because as you mentioned, we are a little bit past time.
I'll be brief. But
just a little. No. What are the three community trends that you're most excited for in B2B tech in 2022 and beyond?
So many trends and things happening. One of them that I will share that has me doing a lot of thinking, probably like too much deep philosophical thinking, you know, like thinking about space where your just head starts getting a headache. But it is top of mind for me. Community is no longer secret. It's not a rare unicorn. I would say we're starting to get into a place where it's a norm. It's something everybody has in some form or fashion. I don't think we're totally there yet, but we're getting there. And what that raises for me that I think about daily is how that's going to affect the way I approach community and how I approach building out my programs, how I approach building out my metrics. Like, is it going to be a thing where I settle for coexisting and we're just happy people come back? Or is it a thing where I need to start thinking like how I can be the leader and the thing that is top of mind for everybody? So those kinds of questions are starting to percolate. I also think there's a really exciting untapped opportunity for co-community engagement. So for example, we have a great partner network and our partners have some communities. Is there an opportunity for us to like co-sponsor something or be in each other's community and guide each other's customers that direction and more coexist? So I think there's lots of interesting questions that are going to start to be more top of mind. And I think some of the traditional tactics are no longer, unfortunately, going to work as much as they used to. Not that they're not valuable. I just think they need to iterate and change with the times.
I would definitely agree with that for sure. Yeah, I could probably go on and on and on about that one. I love that.
The next episode. My next one, this is something I'm very, very excited about. Specialty fields within community management. So I mentioned community operations is a role that's growing. I just hired a community content manager. Why am I excited about this? Not everybody wants to own and lead a community. And this opens up so many doors for so many different types of people to get involved in the community building process that may not have gotten involved previously. And there is so much opportunity and expertise to be gained from that. And it just really, really excites me that we're building these new career paths and new areas of opportunity. I will just do a quick plug. Community operations is growing and evolving. And I'm a part of this great group called Community Observations, led by Tiffany Odotta and Cassie Mays, and highly, highly recommend whoever might be interested in community ops, join. We meet up, have some great programs, and I anticipate more of that's going to grow too.
I definitely would agree with that. I've been hearing more community ops consistently as well.
Yep. And then the final one related, that I'm curious to see what happens. So while I'm excited, we have all these specialty roles. What I'm also excited about is we have leveling within community now. What I think though, while that's a great trend, I'm really excited about it. What I think is missing and needs a deeper conversation is what that leveling means and some kind of industry alignment on it. I'm sure anyone that may be listening can recall a time where they were reading three different job posts for three different levels, CM, senior CM, director, and they're the same. When we all know, you know, a CM probably should have different responsibilities than a director has. And so I'll be interested to see that evolve. And I'm very excited. There's some, you know, industry powerhouses that are really taking this on and trying to lead the conversation around it. But I think more of it needs to be done because, I think it's more critical than ever. And I worry a little bit when, people are having the same expectations for the same level of roles. And there's pay equity conversations and that, et cetera. But great trend that we have it, but I think there's a lot of work to be done in it.
I would definitely agree. And I love that you pointed out also like the excitement, but then there's also like almost hesitations of it. I love that you pointed out because I think that is something that sometimes can be overlooked. Like people are so excited about the future that sometimes those things that when progress happens too fast per se, then in 5 years, 10 years, you're almost having to fix it. And it's much more painful to fix it after it's kind of built in and built up a little bit more than when you're actually building it.
Yeah, and I would encourage any community manager to engage with recruiters too. Community is a hot topic right now. Everybody's hiring for community. I get approached oftentimes by recruiters, and I take that as an opportunity to ask the questions. What is the role and responsibility for this position? What's the pay for this position? What's the anticipated growth? And they're very open to the conversation too. I've had a lot of recruiters even just reach out and say, hey, Allison, like thinking about posting this position, is this the right title? Is this the right role and responsibility? I think they're hungry for that information. And I would encourage you in any interview process to be really transparent and honest and give them that feedback too. Because us being involved in those process is also going to push the needle in the direction it needs to be pushed too.
Agreed 100%, especially in today's market, where if you're good, you're getting snapped up so fast. But part of that is equally making sure that's at the right kind of market rate per se, and making sure that you're not settling for a lower rate for that title, for those responsibilities, because then there's going to be this like huge inequality, almost like band happening of it's going to be super wide, where in reality, each of those should really be a pretty finite band.
Yep. And luckily we have some great, you know, industry powerhouses doing a lot of pay equity, transparency. I mean, you can Google now and get a lot of information that we didn't have 5 years ago. So I think we're headed in the right direction. I think we're having the right conversations. I just encourage some pushback and thoughtful pushback. I'm not saying go to a recruiter and have at it. There are people too, and recruiters are amazing and awesome and probably need to be bowed down to and given lots of presence right now for the amount of things that they are having to manage and deal with. But it is important to ask the questions and not be afraid to ask the questions, because they're also very unsure about this space and trying to figure it out.
I would definitely agree. And on a plug or side note, I would equally say to all you recruiters, we love you here and we all appreciate you. And for those who don't, I'm very sorry, but we love you.
Yes.
But that's what counts.
Yeah, no, I feel like recruiters have one of the hardest jobs, especially in this market right now. And they're doing lots and lots of good work. So, and they're great resources too. I've been very lucky in every professional experience I've had to have some great recruiters. So utilize them and also help them and guide them. And especially the community roles too.
Definitely would agree. On that note though, we've come to the end of the episode. So Allison, again, thank you so much for being on the Community-Led Growth Show. If people want to connect or follow you on social, what are the best channels and or handles for them to do so?
LinkedIn is probably the best right now. I also have an Instagram, but it is not necessarily community focused. It's all about my dog. I am one of those people. And I technically have Twitter. Now I have not been the best Twitterer. That's my goal this year. Tweeter? I don't even know.
I love it.
I need to get on board, because I lurk occasionally. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much great community content on Twitter that I didn't even know about. So you can find me also on Twitter. I think I'm @_able or something of that nature, but I'll double check and let you know. But yes, Twitter is my goal, 2022.
I love it that you have personal social goals. Awesome. Yes. Well, thank you so much and have a great day.
Thank you.